The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Welcome to Beyond, an hour-long program of science fiction, fantasy, and adventure. If you enjoy the program, please drop a line to beyond3x5@gmail.com.
Today I'll be reading from the book Odd and the Frost Giants by Neil Gaiman. This is going to be probably a two-parter. Chapter 1. Odd. There was a boy called Odd, and there was nothing strange or unusual about that, not in that time or place. Odd meant the tip of a blade, and it was a lucky name. He was odd, though. At least the other villagers thought so, but if there was one thing that he wasn't, it was lucky. His father had been killed during a sea raid 2 years before, when Odd was 10. It was not unknown for people to get killed in sea raids, but his father wasn't killed by a Scotsman, dying in glory in the heat of battle as a Viking should. He had jumped overboard to rescue one of the stocky little ponies that they took with them on their raids as pack animals. They would load the ponies up with all the gold and valuables and food and weapons that they could find, and the ponies would trudge back to the longship. The ponies were the most valuable and hard-working things on the ship. After Olaf the Tall was killed by a Scotsman, Odd's father had to look after the ponies. Odd's father wasn't very experienced with ponies, being a woodcutter and woodcarver by trade, but he did his best. On the return journey, one of the ponies got loose during a squall of Orkney and fell overboard. Odd's father jumped into the Grey Sea with a rope, pulled the pony back to the ship, and with the other Vikings hauled it back up on deck. He died before the next morning of the cold and the wet and the water in his lungs. When they returned to Norway, they told Odd's mother, and Odd's mother told Odd. Odd just shrugged. He didn't cry. He didn't say anything. Nobody knew what Odd was feeling on the inside. Nobody knew what he thought. And in a village on the banks of a fjord, where everybody knew everybody's business, that was infuriating. There were no full-time Vikings back then. Everybody had another job. Sea raiding was something the men did for fun, or to get things they couldn't find in their village. They even got their wives that way. Odd's mother, who was dark, as Odd's father had been fair, had been brought to the fjord on a long ship from Scotland. She would sing Odd the ballads that she had learned as a girl, back before Odd's father had taken her knife away and thrown her over his shoulder and carried her back to the long ship. Odd wondered if she missed Scotland, but when he asked her, she said no, not really. She just missed people who spoke her language. She could speak the language of the Norse now, but with an accent. Odd's father had been a master of the axe. He had a one-room cabin that he had built from logs deep in the little forest behind the ford. And he would go out to the woods and return a week or so later with his handcart piled high with logs, all ready to weather and to split, for they made everything they could out of wood in these parts. Wooden nails joined wooden boards to build wooden dwellings or wooden boats. In the winter, when the snows were too deep for travel, Odd's father would sit by the fire and carve, making wood into faces and toys and drinking cups and bowls, while Odd's mother sewed and cooked and always, always sang. She had a beautiful voice. Odd didn't understand the words of the songs she sang, but she would translate them after she had sung them, and his head would roil with fire lords, riding out on their great horses, their noble falcons on their wrists, brave hounds always padding by their sides, off to get into all manner of trouble, fighting giants and rescuing maidens and freeing the oppressed from tyranny. After Odd's father died, his mother sang less and less. Odd kept smiling, though, and it drove the villagers mad. He even smiled after the accident that crippled his right leg. It was 3 weeks after the longship had come back without his father's body. Odd had taken his father's tree-cutting axe, so huge he could hardly lift it, and had hauled it out into the woods, certain that he knew all there was to know about cutting trees, and determined to put this knowledge into practice. He should possibly, he admitted to his mother later, have used a smaller axe and a smaller tree to practice on. Still, what he did was remarkable. After the tree had fallen on his foot, he had used the axe to dig away the earth beneath his leg, and he had pulled it out, and he had cut a branch to make himself a crutch to lean on, for the bones in his leg were shattered. And somehow he had got himself home, hauling his father's heavy axe with him, for metal was rare in those hills, and axes needed to be bartered or stolen, and he could not have left it to rust. So 2 years passed, and Odd's mother married Fat Alfred, who was amiable enough when he had not been drinking, but he already had 4 sons and 3 daughters from a previous marriage. His wife had been struck by lightning, and he had no time for a crippled stepson. So Odd spent more and more time out in the great woods. Odd loved the spring, when the waterfalls began to course down the valleys and the woodland was covered with flowers. He liked summer, when the first berries began to ripen, and autumn, when there were nuts and small apples. Odd did not care for the winter, when the villagers spent as much time as they could in the village's great hall, eating root vegetables and salted meat. In winter, the men would fight and fart and sing and sleep and wake and fight again, and the women would shake their heads and sew and knit and mend. By March, the worst of the winter would be over. The snow would thaw, the rivers began to run, and the world would wake into itself again. Not that year. Winter hung in there like an invalid refusing to die. Day after gray day, the ice stayed hard. The world remained unfriendly and cold. In the village, people got on one another's nerves. They'd been staring at each other across the great hall for 4 months now. It was time for the men to make the longship seaworthy. Time for the women to start clearing the ground for planting. The games became nasty. The jokes became mean. Fights were to hurt. Which is why one morning at the end of March, some hours before the sun was up, when the frost was hard and the ground still like iron, while Fat Alfred and his children and Odd's mother were still asleep, Odd put on his thickest, warmest clothes, stole a side of smoke-blackened salmon from where it hung in the rafters of Fat Alfred's house, and a fire pot with a handful of glowing embers from the fire. And he took his father's second-best axe, which he tied by a leather thong to his belt, and limped out into the woods. The snow was deep and treacherous, with a thick, shiny crust of ice. It would have been hard walking for a man with 2 good legs, but for a boy with 1 good leg, 1 very bad leg, and a wooden crutch, every hill was a mountain. Odd crossed a frozen lake which should have melted weeks before, and went deep into the woods. The days seemed almost as short as they had been in midwinter, and although it was only mid-afternoon, it was dark as night by the time he reached his father's old wood-cutting hut. The door was blocked by snow, and Odd had to take a wooden spade and dig it out before he could enter. He fed the fire pot with kindling and tended it until he felt safe transferring the fire into the fireplace where the old logs were dry. On the floor he found a lump of wood, slightly bigger than his fist. He was going to throw it on the fire, but his fingers felt carving on the small wooden block, and so he put it to one side to look at when it was light. He gathered snow in a small pan and melted it over the fire, and he ate smoked fish and hot berry water. It was good. There were blankets in the corner still and a straw-stuffed mattress, and he could imagine that the little room smelled of his father, and nobody hit him or called him a cripple or an idiot. And so after building the fire high enough that it would still be burning in the morning, he went to sleep quite happy. Chapter 2. The Fox, the Eagle, and the Bear. Odd was woken by something scratching against the hut. He pulled himself up to his feet, thought briefly about tales of trolls and monsters, hoping that it wasn't a bear, then opened the door. It was daylight outside, which meant it was late in the morning, and a fox was staring up at him insolently from the snow. Its muzzle was narrow, its ears were pricked and sharp, and its expression was calculating and sly. When it saw that Odd was watching, it jumped into the air as if it were trying to show off and retreated a little way and then stopped. It was red-orange like flame, and it took a dancing step or two towards Odd and turned away, then looked back at Odd as if it were inviting him to follow. It was, Odd concluded, an animal with a plan. He had no plans other than a general determination never to return to the village. And it was not every day that you got to follow a fox. So he did. It moved like a flame, always ahead of him. If Odd slowed down, if the terrain was too difficult, if the boy got tired, then the fox would simply wait patiently at the top of the nearest rise until Odd was ready, and then his tail would go up and it would flicker forward into the snow. Odd pressed on. There was a bird circling high overhead. A hawk, Odd thought, and then it landed in a dead tree and he realized how big it was and knew it was an eagle. Its head was cocked oddly to one side, and Odd was convinced it was watching him. He followed the fox up a hill and down another. Down was harder than up for Odd in the snow, with one bad foot and a crutch, and several times he fell. And then halfway up another to a place where a dead pine tree stuck out from the hill like a rotten tooth. A silver birch tree grew close beside the dead pine, and it was here that the fox stopped. A mournful bellow greeted them. The dead tree had a hole in one side, the kind that bees sometimes inhabit and fill with honeycomb. The people in Odd's village would make the honey into the alcoholic mead they drank to celebrate the safe return of their Vikings and the midwinter and any other excuse they needed to celebrate. An enormous brown bear had its front paw caught in the hollow of the pine tree. Odd smiled grimly. It was obvious what had happened. In order to get at the pine tree hollow, the bear had leaned its weight against the birch tree, bending it down and moving it out of the way. But the moment the bear had pushed its paw into the hole, it had taken its weight off the birch, which had snapped back, and now the bear was profoundly trapped. The animal bellowed once more, a deeply grumpy bellow. It looked miserable, but not as if it were about to attack. Warily, Odd walked towards the tree. Above them, the eagle circled. Odd unhooked his axe from his belt and walked around the pine tree. He cut a piece of wood about 6 inches long and used it to prop the two trees apart. He did not want to crush the bear's paw. Then, with clean, economical blows, he swung the blade of his axe against the birch. The wood was hard, but he kept swinging, and he had soon come close to cutting it through. Odd looked at the bear. The bear looked at Odd with big brown eyes. Odd spoke aloud. "I can't run," he said to the bear, "so if you want to eat me, you'll find me easy prey. But I should have worried about that before, shouldn't I? Too late now." He took a deep breath and swung the axe one last time. The birch tree tipped and fell away from the bear, who blinked and pulled its paw from the hollow in the pine tree. The paw was dripping with honey. The bear licked its paw with a startling pink tongue. Odd, who was hungry, picked a lump of honeycomb from the edge of the hole and ate it, wax and all. The honey oozed down his throat and made him cough. The bear made a sniffling noise. It reached into the tree, pulled out a huge lump of comb, and finished it off in a couple of bites. Then it stood up on its hind legs and it roared. Odd wondered if he was going to die now, if the honey had just been an appetizer, but the bear got down on all fours once more and continued single-mindedly to empty the tree of honey. Snow fell from branches as they brushed past and stung his face. It was getting dark. Odd knew it was time for him to head for home. He started down the hill and was almost at the bottom when he realized that he had absolutely no idea where his hut was. He had followed the fox to get here, but the fox was not going to lead him back. He tried to hurry, and he stumbled on a patch of ice, and his crutch went flying. He landed face first in the hard snow. He crawled towards his crutch, and as he did so, he felt hot breath on the back of his neck. "Hello, bear," said Odd cheerfully. "You had better eat me. I'll be more use as bear food than I will be frozen to death on the ice." The bear did not seem to want to eat Odd. It sat down on the ice in front of him and gestured with its paw. "You mean it?" said Odd. "You aren't going to eat me?" The bear made a rumbling sort of noise in the back of its throat, but it was a gloomy noise and not a hungry noise. And Odd decided to chance his luck. The day could not get stranger after all. He clambered onto the bear's back, holding his crutch with his left hand and clutching the bear's fur with his right. The bear stood up slowly, making sure the boy was on, then set off at a fast lope through the twilight. As the bear sped up, the cold went through Odd's clothes and chilled him to the bone. The fox dashed ahead of them. The eagle flew above them. And Odd thought crazily, happily, "I'm just like one of the brave lords in my mother's ballads, only without the horse, the dog, and the falcon." And he thought, "I can never tell anyone about this because they won't believe it, because even I won't believe it." Snow fell from branches as they brushed past and stung his face, but he laughed as they went. The moon rose, pale and huge, cold, cold. But Odd laughed some more because his hut was waiting for him and he was an impossible lord riding a bear and because he was Odd. The bear stopped in front of Odd's hut and Odd half climbed, half fell from the beast's back. He pulled himself up with his crutch and then he said, "Thank you." He thought the bear nodded its head in the moonlight, but perhaps he had imagined it. There was a crash of wings, and the eagle landed on the snow a few feet from Odd. It tipped its head on one side to stare at Odd with an eye the color of honey. There was nothing but darkness where its other eye should have been. He walked up to his door. The fox was already waiting there, sitting like a dog. The bear padded up to the hut behind him. Odd looked from one animal to the other. "What?" he said testily, although it was obvious what they wanted. And then, "I suppose you had better come in," he said. He opened the door, and they came in. Chapter 3, The Night Conversation. Odd had imagined that the sight of salmon would feed him for a week or more, but bears and foxes and eagles, all he discovered, eat salmon, and he felt that feeding them was the least he could do to thank them for seeing him home. They ate until it was all gone, but only Odd and the eagle seemed satisfied. The fox and the bear both looked like they were still hungry. "We'll find more food tomorrow," said Odd. "Sleep now." The animals stared at him. He walked over to the straw mattress and climbed onto it, placing the crutch carefully against the wall to pull himself up with when he woke. The bed didn't smell like his father at all, he realized as he lay down. It just smelled like straw. Odd closed his eyes and he was asleep. Dreams of darkness, of flashes, of moments, nothing he could hold on to, nothing that comforted him. And then into the dream came a booming, gloomy voice that said, "It wasn't my fault." A higher voice, bitterly amused, said, "All right, I told you not to go pushing that tree down. You just didn't listen. I was hungry. I could smell the honey. You don't know what it's like smelling that honey. It was better than mead, better than roasted goose." And then the gloomy voice, so bass, it made Odd's stomach vibrate, changed its tone. "And you, of all people, don't need to go blaming anyone else. It's because you were in this mess. I thought we had a deal. I thought we weren't going to keep harping on about a trivial little mistake. You called this trivial?" And then a third voice, high and raw, screeched, "Silence." There was silence. Odd rolled over. There was a glow from the fire embers, enough to see the inside of the hut, enough to confirm to Odd that there were not another three people in there with him. It was just him, the fox, and the bear, and the eagle. "Whatever they are," thought Odd, "they don't seem to eat people." He sat up, leaned against the wall. The bear and the eagle both ignored him. The fox darted him, a green-eyed glance. "You were talking," said Odd. The animals looked at Odd and at one another. If they did not actually say, "Who us?" it was there and in their expressions, in the way they held themselves. "Somebody was talking," said Odd. "And it wasn't me. There isn't anyone else in here. That means it was you lot, and there's no point in arguing." "We weren't arguing," said the bear, "because we can't talk." Then it said, "Oops." The fox and the eagle glared at the bear, who put a paw over its eyes and looked ashamed of itself. Odd sighed. "Which one of you wants to explain what's going on?" he said. "Nothing's going on," said the fox brightly. "Just a few talking animals. Nothing to worry about. Happens every day. We'll be out of your hair first thing in the morning." The eagle fixed Odd with its one good eye. Then it turned to face the fox. "Tell." The fox shifted uncomfortably. "Why me?" "Oh," said the bear, "I don't know. Possibly because it's all your fault." "That's a bit much," replied the fox, "blaming the whole thing on a chap like that. It wasn't like I set out to do this. It could have happened to any of us." "What could?" asked Odd, exasperated. "And why can you talk?" The bear pushed itself up onto all fours. It made a rumbling noise. Then it said, "We can talk because, O mortal child, do not be afraid. Beneath these animal disguises we wear, well, not actual disguises. I mean, we are actually a bear and a fox and a big bird, which is a rotten sort of thing to happen, but where was I?" "Gods," screeched the eagle. "Gods?" said Odd. "Aye, gods," said the bear. "I was just getting to that. I am great Thor, lord of the thunders, and the eagle is Lord Odin, all-father, greatest of the gods, and this runt-eared meddling fox is Loki," said the fox smoothly, "blood brother to the gods, smartest, sharpest, most brilliant of all the inhabitants of Asgard, or so they say." "Brilliant," snorted the bear. "You would have fallen for it. Anyone would," said the fox. "Fallen for what?" said Odd. A flash of green eyes, a sigh, and the fox began, "I'll tell you, and you'll see. It could have happened to anyone. So Asgard, home of the mighty, in the middle of a plain surrounded by an impregnable wall built for us by a frost giant, and it was due to me, I should add, that that wall did not cost us the giant's fee, which was unreasonably high." "Freya," said the bear. "The giant wanted Freya, most lovely of the goddesses, with obviously the exception of Sif, my own little love, and if it wanted the sun and the moon." "If you interrupt me one more time," said the fox, "one more time, I will not only stop talking, but I shall go off on my own and leave the two of you to fend for yourselves." The bear said, "Yes, but not one word." The bear was silent. The fox said, "In the great hall of Odin sat all the gods, drinking mead, eating and telling stories. They drank and bragged and fought and boasted and drank all through the night and well into the small hours. The women had gone to bed hours since, and now the fires in the hall burned low, and most of the gods slept where they sat, heads resting on the wooden tables. Even great Odin slept in his high chair, his single eye closed in sleep. And yet there was one among the gods who had drunk and eaten more than any of the others and still was not sleepy. This was I, Loki, called Skywalker, and I was neither sleepy nor yet drunk, not even a little." The bear made a noise, a small grumpy humph of disbelief. The fox looked at him sharply. "I said one word." "That wasn't a word," said the bear. "I just made a noise, so you weren't drunk." "Right, I wasn't. And not drunkenly, I wandered out from the hall and I walked with my shoes that step up on air up to the top of the wall around Asgard. And I looked out over the wall in the moonlight, standing beneath the wall, staring up at me. I saw the most beautiful woman anyone has ever seen. Her flesh was creamy, her hair was golden, her lips, her shoulders, perfection. And in a voice like the striking of a harp string, she called out to me. 'Hail, brave warrior,' she said. 'Hail yourself,' says I. 'Hail, most beautiful of creatures,' at which she laughed prettily and her eyes sparkled, and I knew she liked me. And what would a young lady of such loveliness be doing, a wandering alone and at night, with wolves and trolls and worse on the loose? 'Let me offer you hospitality, the hospitality of Loki, mightiest and wisest of all the lords of Asgard. I declare that I shall take you into my own house and care for you in every way I can.' 'I cannot accept your offer, O brave and extremely good-looking one,' she said to me, eyes shining like twin sapphires in the moonlight. 'For although you are obviously tall and powerful and extremely attractive, I have promised my father, a king who lives far from here, that I will not give my heart or my lips to any but he who possesses one thing.' 'And that one thing is,' says I, determined to bring her anything she named. 'Molinar,' said the maiden, 'the hammer of Thor.' Ha! Pausing only to tell her not to go anywhere, my feet flew, and like the wind I rushed to the great hall. They were all asleep or so drunk it never made no mind. There was Thor, sleeping in a drunken stupor, his face on the gray-covered wooden trencher, and hanging from his side his hammer. Only the nimble fingers of Loki, wiliest and clever, could have teased it from the belt without waking Thor. At this, the bear made a deep noise in the back of his throat. After glaring at it for a moment, the fox said, 'Heavy it was, that hammer, heavier than people dream. It weighed as much as a small mountain, too heavy to carry if you are not Thor, and yet not too much for my genius. I took off my shoes, which I said can walk on air, and tied them, one to the handle and one to the head. Then I snapped my fingers and the hammer followed me. This time I hurried to the gates of Asgard. I unbarred them and I walked through, followed. I do not need to tell you by the hammer. The maiden was there. She was sitting on a boulder and she was weeping. 'Why the tears, O loveliness itself?' I asked. At that she looked up at me with a tear-stained face. 'I weep because once I saw you, great noble lord, I knew I could never love another, and yet I am doomed to give my heart and my caress only to he who lets me touch the hammer of Thor.' I reached out a hand and touched her cold, wet cheek. 'Dry your tears,' I told her, 'and behold the hammer of Thor.' She stopped crying then and reached out her delicate hands and held the hammer tightly. I had reckoned I could have my fun with the lady and still get the hammer back into the hall before Thor woke up, but we would need to get a move on. 'Now,' I said, 'how about that kiss?' For a moment I thought she had begun to cry once again, and then I knew she was laughing, but the noise she made was not a sweet, tinkling, maidenly laugh. It was a deep, crashing noise, like an ice sheet grinding against a mountainside. The maiden pulled my shoes from the hammer and dropped them to the ground. She held the hammer as if it was a feather. A wave of cold engulfed me, and I found myself looking up at her. And to make matters worse, she wasn't even a she any longer. She was a man. Well, not a man. Male, yes. Yet big as a high hill, icicles hanging from his beard. And she, he rather, said, "After so long, all it took was one drunken, lust-ridden oath, and Asgard is ours." Then the forest giant peered down at me, and he gestured with the hammer of Thor. "And you," he said in a deep and extremely satisfied voice, "you need to be something else." I felt my back pushing up. I felt a tail pushing its way out of the base of my spine. My fingers shrank into paws and claws. It wasn't the first time I had turned into animal form. I was a horse once, you know. But it was the first time it was imposed on me from the outside, and it wasn't a nice feeling, not a nice feeling at all. "It was worse for us," said the bear. "One moment you are fast asleep, dreaming about thunderstorms, and the next you're being scrunched into a bear." They turned Allfather into an eagle. The eagle screeched, startling Odd. "Rage," it said. The giant laughed at us, waving my hammer around the while, and then he forced Heimdall to summon the Rainbow Bridge and exiled the three of us here to Midgard. There's no more to tell. There was silence then in the tiny hut, only the crackle and spit of a pine branch on the fire. "Well," said Odd, "gods or not, I can't keep feeding you. If this winter keeps going, I don't think I can keep feeding me." "We won't die," said the bear, "because we can't die here, but we'll get hungry, and we'll get more wild, more animal. It's something that happens when you have taken on an animal form. Stay in it too long, and you become what you pretend to be. When Loki was a horse..." "We don't talk about that," said the fox. "So is that why the winter isn't ending?" said Odd. "The frost giants like the winter." "They are winter," said the bear. "And if spring never comes, if summer doesn't happen, if this winter just goes on forever?" The bear said nothing. The fox switched its tail impatiently. They looked to the eagle. It tilted its head back, and with one fiery yellow eye, it stared at Odd. Then it said, "Death." "Eventually," added the fox, "not immediately, in a year or so, and some creatures will go south, but most of the people and the animals will die. It's happened before, back when we had wars with the frost giants at the dawn of time. When they won, huge ice sheets would cover this part of the world. When we won, and if it took us 100,000 years, we always did, the ice sheets would retreat and the spring would return. But we were gods then, not animals." "And I had my hammer," said the bear. "Well then," said Odd, "we'll set off as soon as it gets light enough to travel." "Set off," said the fox, "for where?" "Asgard, of course," said Odd, and he smiled his infuriating smile. Then he went back to his little bed, and he went back to sleep. Chapter 4. Making Rainbows. "What's that you've got there?" asked the fox. "It's a lump of wood," said Odd. "My father began to carve it into something years ago, and he left it here, but he never came back to finish it." "What was it going to be?" "I don't know," admitted Odd. "My father used to say that the carving was in the wood already. You just had to find out what the wood wanted to be, and then take your knife and remove everything that wasn't that." "Hmm," the fox seemed unimpressed. Odd was riding on the bear's back. The fox trotted along beside them. High above them, the eagle rode the winds. The sun shone in a cloudless blue sky, and it was colder than it had been where there was cloud cover. They were heading towards higher ground, along a rocky ridge, following a frozen river. The wind hurt Odd's face and ears. "This won't work," said the bear gloomily. "I mean, whatever it is, it won't." Odd said nothing. "You're smiling, aren't you?" said the bear. "I can tell." "The thing was this. You got to Asgard. the place the gods come from, by crossing the Rainbow Bridge, which was called Bifrost. If you were a god, you simply wiggled your fingers and a rainbow appeared and you walked across it. Easy, or so the fox said, and the bear morosely agreed. Or at least it was easy until you didn't have fingers, which they didn't. Still, even if you didn't have fingers, Loki pointed out, you could normally still find a rainbow and use it. Rainbows turned up after it rained, didn't they? Well, they didn't in midwinter. Odd thought about it. He thought about the way rainbows appeared on rainy days when the sun came out. I think, said the bear, as a responsible adult, I should point a few things out. Talk is free, said Odd, but the wise man chooses when to spend his words. It was something his father used to say. I just thought I should point out that we are wasting our time. We don't have any way of getting to the Rainbow Bridge. And if by some miracle we crossed it, look at us. We're animals, and you can barely walk. We can't defeat frost giants. This whole thing is hopeless. He's right, said the fox. If it's hopeless, said Odd, why are you coming with me? The animals said nothing. The morning sun sparkled up at them from the snow, dazzling Odd, making him squint. Nothing better to do, said the bear after a while. Up here, said Odd. He clung tightly to the bear's fur as they clambered up the side of a steep hill. They could see the mountains beyond. Stop, said Odd. The waterfall was one of the favorite places on earth. From spring until midwinter, it ran high and fast before it crashed down almost 100 feet into the valley beneath, where it had carved out a rocky basin. In high summer, when the sun barely set, the villagers would come out to the waterfall and splash around in the basin pool, letting the water tumble onto their heads. Now the waterfall was frozen, and ice ran from the crags down to the basin in twisted ropes, great clear icicles. It's a waterfall, said Odd. We used to come out here, and when the water came down and the sun was shining brightly, you could see a rainbow, like a huge circle, all around the waterfall. No water, said the fox. No water, no rainbow. There's water, said Odd, but it's ice. He took the axe from his belt, pushed his crutch beneath his arm, and got down from the bear's back, and walked over to the ice until he stood before the frozen waterfall. He used the crutch to hold himself in a position as best he could. Then he began to swing the axe. The noise of the blade hitting the thick ice cracked off the hills around them, making echoes that sounded as if an entire army of men was hammering on the ice. There was a crash, and an icicle as large as Odd smashed down to the surface of the frozen pool. Clever, said the bear in a kind of tone, a voice that meant it wasn't clever at all. You broke it. Yes, said Odd. He inspected the shards of ice on the ground, picking up the biggest, most cleanly broken piece he could find, then took it to the side of the frozen pool and put it on a rock and stared at it. It's a lump of ice, said the fox, if you ask me. Yes, said Odd, I think the rainbows are imprisoned in the ice when the water freezes. The boy took out his knife and began to trace outlines on the ice block with the blade, going back and forth with it, scoring it as best he could. The eagle circled high above them, almost invisible in the midwinter sun. He's been up there a long time, said the bear. Do you think he's looking for something? The fox said, I worry about him. It must be hard to be an eagle. He could get lost in there. When I was a horse, a mare, you mean, said the bear with a grunt. The fox tossed his head and walked away. Odd put his knife down and took out his axe once more. I've seen rainbows on the snow sometimes, said Odd, loud enough for the fox to hear, and on the side of buildings when the sun shone through the icicles. And I thought ice is only water, so it must have rainbows in it, too. When the water freezes, the rainbows are trapped in it like a fish in a shallow pool, and the sunlight sets them free. Odd knelt on the frozen pond. He hit the big lump of ice with his axe. This did nothing. The axe just glanced off the ice and nearly cut into his leg. Do that again and you'll break the axe, said the fox. Hold on. He nosed along the bank of frozen pool for several minutes. Then he began scrabbling at the snow. Here, he said, this is what you need. He put his paw on a gray rock he had revealed. Odd pulled at the stone, which came up easily from the ground, and it proved to be a flint. Part of it was gray, but the other part, the translucent part of the flint, was a deep salmon pink color, and it seemed to have been chipped. Don't touch the edges, said the fox. It'll be sharp, really sharp. They didn't mess about when they made those things, and they don't blunt easily if you make them well. What is it? A hand axe. They used to do sacrifices here, on that big rock over there, and they used tools like this to slice up the animal and to part flesh from the bones. How do you know? Asked Odd. There was satisfaction and pride in the fox's voice as it said, Who do you think they were making sacrifices to? Odd brought the tool over to the lump of ice. He ran his hands over the ice, slippery as a fish. Then he began to attack the ice with the flint. The rock felt warm in his hands, hot even. It's hot, said Odd. Is it? Said the fox, sounding pleased with itself. The ice fell away under the flint axe, just as Odd had wanted it to. He hacked it into a shape that was almost triangular, thicker on one side than on the other. The fox and the bear stood nearby, watching. The eagle descended to see what was going on, landed in the leafless branches of a tree, and was still as a statue. Odd took his ice triangle and placed it so that the sunlight shone through it onto the white snow that drifted on the frozen pool. Nothing happened. He twisted it, tilted it, moved it around, and a puddle of light appeared on the snow, all the colors of the rainbow. How is that? Asked Odd. But it's on the ground, said the bear doubtfully. It should be in the air. I mean, how can that be a bridge? The eagle took off from the tree with a flap of wings and began to fly upwards. I don't think he's very impressed, said the fox. Nice try. Odd shrugged. He could feel his mouth pulling up into a smile even as his heart sank. He had been so proud of himself making a rainbow. His hands were numb. He hefted the stone axe, was about to throw it hard away from him, and then simply dropped it. A screech. Odd looked up to see the eagle plummeting towards them. He began to step back, marveling at the eagle's speed, wondering how the bird could pull out in time. It didn't pull out. The eagle hit the patch of colored light on the white snow without slowing, as if it was diving into a pool of liquid water. The puddle of color splashed and opened. Scarlet fell softly about them, and everything was outlined in greens and blues, and the world was raspberry-colored and leaf-colored and golden-colored and fire-colored and blueberry-colored and wine-colored. Odd's world was colors, and despite his crutch, he could feel himself falling forward, tumbling into the rainbow. Everything went dark. Odd's eyes took moments to adjust, and when they did, above him was a velvet night sky hung with a billion stars. A rainbow arced across it, and Odd was walking on the rainbow. No, not walking. His feet didn't move. It felt as if he was being carried up the arch, going upwards, forwards, uncertain how fast he was traveling, only certain that he was somehow swept up in the colors and that it was the colors of the rainbow that were carrying him along. He looked behind him, wondering if he would see the snowy world he had left, but he saw nothing but blackness, empty even of stars. Odd's stomach gave a sort of a lurch. He could feel himself dropping, and he turned his head to see the rainbow fading. Through the prism of colors, he saw huge fir trees, foggy and purple and blue and red. And then the trees came into focus and found their own color, a cool bluish green. As Odd tumbled off the side of a fir tree and down into a drift of snow, the scent of bruised fir tree surrounded him. It was daylight. He was wet and cold, but unhurt. He glanced up, but there was no sign of the rainbow bridge. Silently across the thick snow, the fox and the bear were walking towards him, And then, with a rattle and a clatter, the eagle landed on a branch beside him, making the snow on the branch fall flump to the ground. The eagle looked less crazy now, thought Odd. And then it looks bigger. "Where is this place?" asked Odd, but he knew the answer, knew it even before the eagle threw back its head and screamed with delight and with relish and with keen dark joy. Asgard. Chapter 5. At Mirmir's Well. Really, truly, with all of his heart, Odd found that he wanted to believe that he was still in the world he had known all his life, that he was still in the country of the Norse folk, that he was in Midgard. Only he wasn't, and he knew it. The world smelled different, for a start. It smelled alive. Everything he looked at looked sharper, more real, more there. And if there was any doubt, then he had only to look at the animals. "You got bigger," he told them. "You've grown." And they had. The fox's ears were now level with Odd's chest, the eagle's wingspan, when the bird preened in the sunshine, was as wide as a longship. The bear, which had not been small to begin with, was now the size of Odd's father's hut, enormous in its bulk and in its bearishness. "We didn't grow," said the fox, its fur the vivid orange color of a blazing fire. "This is how big we are here. We're normal-sized." Odd nodded. Then he said, "So this whole place is called Asgard, and the town we have to go to is also called Asgard, yes?" "We named it after ourselves," said the bear, "after the Aesir." "How far is it to your place?" The fox sniffed the air, then it looked around. There were mountains behind them and a forest all about them. "A day's travel, maybe a little more. Once we get through this forest, we reach the plain, and the town is in the center of the plain." Odd nodded. "I suppose we should get on with it, then." "There will be time," said the bear. "Asgard is not going anywhere, and right now I am hungry. I am going fishing. Why don't you two build a fire?" And without waiting to see what would happen, the great beast lumbered off into the darkness of the forest. The eagle flapped its wings, loud as a small thunderclap, and it took off, circling higher and higher, and then followed the bear. Odd and the fox gathered wood, finding dry twigs and branches. Then Odd heaped them high. He took out his knife and sliced the point on a hard stick, put the point against a piece of dry, soft wood, preparing to rotate the stick between his hands to use the friction to make a fire. The fox eyed him, unimpressed. "Why bother?" he said. "This is easier." It put its muzzle against the heap of wood, breathed on the twigs. The air above the twigs wavered and shimmered. Then with a crackle, the sticks caught fire. "How did you do that?" "This is Asgard," said the fox. "It's less solid than the place you come from. The gods, even transformed gods. Well, there is power in this place, you understand?" "Not really, but not to worry." Odd sat beside the fire and he waited for the bear and the eagle to return. While he waited, he took out the piece of wood his father had started to carve. He inspected it, puzzling over the shape, familiar yet strange, wondering what it had been intended to be, and why it should bother him so. He ran his thumb over it, and it comforted him. It was twilight by the time the bear brought back the largest trout Odd had ever seen. The boy gutted it with his knife. The fox devoured the raw guts enthusiastically. Then he speared it through with a long stick, cut two forked sticks to make an improvised spit, and he roasted it over the fire, turning it every few minutes to ensure it did not burn. When the fish was cooked, the eagle took its head, and the other three divided the meat between them, the bear eating more than the other two put together. The twilight edged imperceptibly into night, and a huge dark yellow moon began to rise on the horizon, achingly, slowly. When they had finished eating, the fox went to sleep beside the fire, and the eagle flapped heavily off into a dead pine to sleep. Odd took the leftover fish and pushed it into a drift of snow to keep it fresh, as his mother had taught him. The bear looked at Odd, then it said casually, "You must be thirsty. Come on, let's look for some water. Odd climbed onto the bear's broad back and held tight as it lumbered off into the darkness of the forest. It didn't feel like they were looking for anything, though. It felt like the bear knew exactly where he was going, that he was heading somewhere, up a ridge and down into a small gorge and through a copse of trees, magical in its stillness, and then they were pushing through scratchy gorse, and now they were in a small clearing in the center of which was a pool of liquid water. Careful, said the bear quietly. It goes down a long way. Odd stared. The yellow moonlight was deceptive, but still. There are shapes moving in the water, he said. Nothing in there that will hurt you, said the bear. They're just reflections, really. It's safe to drink. I give you my word. Odd untied his wooden cup from his belt. He dipped it into the water, and he drank. The water was refreshing and strangely sweet. He had not realized how thirsty he had been, and he filled and emptied his wooden cup four times, and then he yawned. Feels so sleepy. It's all the traveling, said the bear. Here, let me. Pulled over several fallen fir branches at the edge of the clearing with its teeth. Curl up on these. But the others, said Odd. I'll tell them you fell asleep in the woods, said the bear. Just don't go wandering off for now, just rest. And the bear lay down on the branches, crushing them under its bulk. The boy lay beside the animal, smelling the deep bearish scent of it, pushing against the fur and feeling the softness and the warmth. The world was comfortable and quiet and warm. He was safe, and everything was enclosed by the dark. Thank you for listening to part one. Part two will begin next week.